I'm not usually an Adbusters reader these days. I once was. But the other day I was walking by a magazine rack and something drew me to this latest issue. It wasn't the I Feel Nothing kind of cynical picture on the front. And right inside the front cover is this. What happened 6 billion years ago? What was happening before that? Why is there something instead of nothing? Does life on Earth have any meaning? Why are we marching to a capitalist drumbeat, allowing ourselves to be so easily seduced? Can we break the spell, find new ways to live, love, and think? Of course we can, but we'll have to go deeper than we've ever gone before. I have to say that I love it when a secular source calls us to the gospel. It calls us to that deeper something, and I shouldn't be surprised at this point in my life because it happens all the time. But it breaks open these big questions, even as it acutely addresses the ache and emptiness and brokenness of modern life and the very peril of the planet upon which we live and depend on. So let's face it, I think we bother to show up here today because we do long for something more. And even as we sing our praises and give thanks on this season of creation Sunday, we're aware, all too aware, that the planet, that God's handiwork is teetering towards extinction. And it doesn't have to be that way. It's because of our actions. So, welcome to church, folks. I can't help but laugh out loud every year, the season of back to church, where summer's winding down and we get rolling on the unofficial church year. That's where we get stuff like this. Jesus is teaching that, as Siobhan pointed out, we hope gets explained. I'll probably leave you sadly disappointed. Jesus' words today, however, they are meant to shock us. Whoever comes to me and does not hate father and mother, wife and children, brothers and sisters, yes, and even your life itself cannot be disciple. Who does not carry the cross and follow me cannot be my disciple. None of you can become my disciple if you do not give up all your possessions. So, if you're new here, or if you haven't been around a while, indeed, welcome back to church. Oh, and by the way, if you want to be one of us, hate your family, carry a cross, and give up all of your possessions. So here at Abbey Church, we try and live into this strange tension. We want to be a place where we open up the doors wide and invite every single person to come as they are. That's why this table is open. That's why we just try and welcome people who they are. We seek to be radically inclusive, and I believe that that's actually following Jesus, because Jesus was and is radically inclusive. But at the same time, we offer you a very uncomfortable pew, a place where Jesus calls us to something, and in fact, it's to deep life change. And to echo Adbusters, it's a place where we need to go deeper than ever before. And let's face it, that's bloody hard work. One of the commentators on this passage from Luke's gospel that Caroline just read took an informal poll of clergy at a clergy gathering and found out that most clergy said they would never preach on it. And certainly not on a week when people are starting to filter back from sipping pina coladas all summer. But I think we do need to face it head on. I think we actually even need to listen to that call. For I believe that Jesus' call is the way to something deeper and more real than we can ask or imagine. I think that call to renunciation which Jesus demands of us is a powerful and necessary thing for our spiritual good, and in fact for the good of the planet and for the good of our beings. But a couple caveats, a couple things to note about this before we go there. Hate your family, Jesus says. That word, miseo, it's the Greek word for hate. And try as I might, I was hoping that, you know, I could look at the etymology, and I was like, there's got to be something that's up here. So I did all that, and I said to Megan, there's no getting around it. In Western languages, including Greek and English, hate does have a strong polarized meaning. It makes us shudder, and it rightly should. God knows there's enough hate to go around in the world, and if the news is right, it's on the rise. And what about God is love? Love your neighbor as yourself. But for those who are speaking Semitic languages, like Aramaic or Hebrew, as Jesus did, miseo was considerably wider, softer, and had more nuances in its meaning. So this is my out, by the way. Because miseo, to an Aramaic or a Hebrew speaker, could have connotations of leaving aside, renouncing, abandonment. Now, that's not necessarily easy either, but it's an easier kind of nuance to get our head around. And so it is that Jesus today says that the renunciation of things, even the things which are closest to our hearts, like our families and ourselves, our own egos, our own beings, that's actually part of our spiritual work. Seek first God's reign, and don't worry, the rest will come, he says elsewhere. The surrender of even our closest relationships into that God work and into that love of God is necessary, to the point that, as the poem pointed out, it will be divisive, it will break our hearts, and it will break the hearts of the ones we love. I think that we Christians get nervous at that surrender and renunciation language, because it's been used by parts of our tradition to suggest that the world, or sex, or stuff, or food, material is bad. And actually, the church spent a lot of time trying to say that kind of thinking is not what God is saying, even though we didn't always live into that, and we still don't. And sure, those things we know can become idols like anything else. But I actually wonder if Jesus doesn't deliberately duck those kind of examples, those kind of easy targets, to actually challenge us even further, to go deeper to the heart of it. What should you love most? Forget food or sex or your music collection. I'm calling you to a higher bar. Give up family, self, stuff. Surrender those and follow me into abundant life. So yeah, the words are tough, but I think they're real. And I actually don't think that we have the luxury at this time in the life of the world to not do some renunciation. Because if we collectively continue to live the way we're living, our way of living is going to collapse. And it's possible that our souls already are. It seems to be a very modern dilemma, doesn't it? But it's actually very ancient. Even before Jesus, the wandering tribes of Israel who just left slavery in the Egyptian Empire were in a similar bind amidst the scorpions and heat of the desert wilderness. And so God says, look, I've set before you today life and prosperity, death and adversity. That was some 2,700, give or take, depending on your scholarship, years ago. But it could surely be a slogan at a climate change rally today. I've set before you life and prosperity, death and adversity. So activists at those rallies talk about extinction rebellion. And that moment so long ago might have been one of the earliest forms of extinction rebellion. If you obey the commandments of the Lord your God that I am commanding you today, by loving the Lord your God, walking in God's ways, and observing God's commandments, then you shall live and become numerous, and the Lord your God will bless you in the land you are entering to possess. Again, it's hard for our modern ears to hear that we need to observe laws and turn away from other gods. But that call to limits, it makes a lot of sense. If we have no sense of limits, well, we only need to look around and see what happens. we are marching to the beat of unfettered capitalism. And when it comes down to it, the call to limits isn't anything different than the scientists and climate change folks haven't been saying for years. If we don't renounce our idols and set limits, we're gonna die. Choose life so that you and your descendants may live, loving the Lord your God, obeying and holding fast to God, for that means life to you and length of days, so that you may live in the land the Lord swore to give to your ancestors. Having limits, obeying God's command, including Sabbath keeping, who our poet in residence pointed out to me, actually all the other commands flow out of. Sabbath keeping, not killing, not having idols, these are connected to the good of the people, the good of the land, and our quality of life. And so we do have a choice to make. It's life or death. It's that simple. And it's that stark in the headlines. If we don't change our ways, if we don't turn from idols, we're done, God says. And we do have a responsibility beyond ourselves to generation after generation after generation. It's to live so that our descendants might live and that the land might flourish. And sure, the idols, they might be of stone, or they might be of fossil fuel, or different kinds of technology or consumption, or they might even be something closer to home, like the need to be affirmed by your family, or to live into your own vanity, or to cling to your stuff. And the call to let it all go, to pick up a cross, an image that was no abstraction for those in the Roman Empire, that call to follow Jesus was, and dare I say is, a call to death. But it's ultimately a deeper, fuller, more sustainable life to which we are called, individually and collectively. And I think that deep down, those of us who cling to loving the stuff, as do I, instead of delving deeper, we know that it isn't really feeding us, and it isn't caring for this beautiful, blessed earth either. Which is great, but how is this good news? I mean, yes, it's good news for the planet and for our survival, and that, of course, is a good thing. But the trouble here is all of this can risk just simply having us all feel awful. The problems are too big, and my will is too small to live into this call. But that's okay. The beauty of Christian spirituality is that God does the work, and that God's Holy Spirit working in us does more than we can ask or imagine. So there's this delicate tension between the law, all those limits and things that challenge us away from desecrating each other and desecrating the earth, and grace. Deuteronomy notes, if we don't follow the law, things will go to pot. And then there's this amazing grace that acknowledges that no matter how hard we struggle and try, we're never going to live up to the law. It's kind of comforting to me that God knows that. And so comes this Jesus moment, this ultimate moment where Jesus himself carried a cross and made the ultimate renunciation. The ultimate renunciation meaning that we actually don't have to. It means that there's a huge grace margin in our inability to renounce and surrender and live well. No, it doesn't get us off the hook, but it gives us a heck of a lot of breathing room to stumble into the care of an ever-merciful God. And that is good news. And I kind of think that it's only flowing from this awareness of ever-abundant grace that we can actually experience the joy of true surrender, of true letting go. For only then does renunciation cease to be yet another thing to do, to add to our already cluttered lives, to our sense of guilt. And it becomes a posture of trust in God's grace and abundance and faithfulness. And I'm preaching to the choir, by the way. Great is thy faithfulness, and yes, it is lifelong work. So when we fail, we remember that Jesus has searched us and known us and loves us and follows us. And though we're called to an uncomfortable pew, it is actually a place of deep, deep rest in the wilderness as we come to God's table of deep, inclusive welcome. So yes, Adbusters, we do need to find new ways to live, love, and think, to go deeper than we've ever gone before. We do need to choose life over death. We need to adopt the language of the climate change activists and ourselves have an extinction rebellion. Rebellion against the extinction of our souls and of the planet. And Jesus is right. For the Christian, that path to life is a path to death. It's surrender. So today we choose life so that we might live and so that our descendants might live. By God's grace and with the Spirit's help, today we challenge extinction and we choose life to follow Jesus and to go deeper, deeper, deeper than we ever have before. By God's grace and help, may we do it together. Amen.